Tom Ross, the president of the University of North Carolina system, is calling it a horrible chapter in the University of North Carolina's 225-year history. He's referring to the findings of that investigation that concluded that over 18 years, more than 3,100 students at the university, nearly half of them athletes, enrolled in classes they did not show up for. The report also says they received artificially inflated grades in a shadow curriculum that existed at the school for almost two decades. Former Justice Department official Kenneth Weinstein led the investigation.
They didn't take notes, have to stay awake. They didn't have to meet with professors. And the only coursework they had to do was to write a single paper.
And the academic fraud at UNC centered around the African and Afro-American Studies Department. Mike Pesca is here now, sports analyst. He also hosts the podcast. What is wrong with me, Mike? I have not been nipping at anything. He hosts the podcast, The Gist, at Slate.com. So give us some context here. You know, there have been other investigations. Put this one in context.
I will. And I'll just also offer you an excuse by saying this is a truly jaw-dropping report. And so maybe that's what happened to your jaw. Anyway, you know, the context is we have seen many an academic scandal over the years. But this, the contagion here and also the institutionalization of the scandal is all but unprecedented. So we may hear stories, you know, even members of the Harvard basketball team, a couple of them had to leave school for a year sort of to clear themselves, and scandals here and there and someone doing a paper. Essentially, they, meaning the cheaters, the people who wanted to get athletes by who didn't have the academic rigor to pass on their own, they essentially captured an entire department, as you say. This African and Afro-American Studies Department just became a very efficient system to give any student, athlete, which really is just an athlete, the grade they wanted. And they captured emails between members of the faculty and members of the sports team saying, what grade does the student need? Just a D? Well, I think I could swing that because, and then the person in the department would list all these shortcomings of the paper, including it's not at all about the topic I asked. And then the student would get the D. It's just quite incredible.
It's amazing. Not only were athletes steered to these classes, but they became popular with fraternities, you know, people who could pass the word around. This is the class where you can just get an easy grade. But there was complicity. You say these emails, people knew about this. Two decades. How is it possible that it doesn't go all the way to the top?
Well, I would say when your economic interests align with ignorance, it's power. It's pretty amazing how powerful a force that can be, and to keep people in the dark. And I don't know how high up it goes, but certainly there are people, the coaches of the teams don't want to know. They have an academic advisor who their job is to keep the players eligible. A lot of the basketball coaches have been there for a while. A few of those football coaches have cycled through. And so it's mostly a football problem because, you know, the roster of a football team is so big. But the men's basketball team, which won three national championships during the time this scandal was going on, they're caught up in it too. The women's basketball team, some other athletes. So yeah, I should point out that this investigation, UNC, there were stops and starts about how serious they were, and there was a whistleblower, a reading specialist. There was a whistleblower at UNC, and she had a tough time, and she essentially chose to leave school, but her accusations didn't really land on fertile ground within UNC faculty. And what she was alleging was academic fraud and just how they were admitting students who were illiterate, essentially, you know, who read on a fourth to eighth grade level. So that sets you up for having to, you know, how do you keep kids eligible at a really good school when they're just not at all able to do the work? Anyway, this whistleblower, her name was Willingham. She did not, you know, her word caused some of this to be investigated. It took 3 years. It was on the cover of the local newspaper in 2011. But this Kenneth Weinstein investigation really went so much further than anyone thought it would.
Yeah. And the school has announced that four staff members have been fired. Another five are under review. But just, we know this is part of a bigger picture. Taylor Branch, Joe Nocera, everyone talking about problems with college athletes in particular, and talking about athletes at other schools not taking classes. What's your sense, you know, of how UNC compares? Is it just much worse, or do you think other schools are now feeling a little chill?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly how they compare. Every other school will definitely say, well, not us. It couldn't happen here. Of course, they said that about the Sandusky scandal in Penn State, and that exact scandal couldn't happen here. And maybe they're looking at how Florida State investigated domestic abuse, rape, kids or student athletes shooting people with pellet guns. And every other school says it couldn't happen here. So you have all these things that couldn't happen here, except some version of them are happening everywhere. Maybe it's the rot. Maybe it's the rot, the fundamental rot, the foundation of college sports, which are, we're going to make billions of dollars. We're not going to pay these kids. We're going to let them into institutions of higher learning, even though it's pretty clear that a lot of them can't cope with the work. And even if they maybe could cope with the work, we're going to make so many demands on their time to generate these billions of dollars that we're not really giving them an academic chance. I mean, you know, evidence, piece of evidence after piece of evidence really makes you question the fundamentals of the ideal of amateurism paired with this billion-dollar industry that is big-time college sports.
Well, Mike, let's talk about something a little more positive, shall we? There is a World Series going on and a sport actually being played. Play resumes tomorrow night in San Francisco. After last night's game in Kansas City, the Royals won that 7-2. So the series tied at one game apiece of a win. After last night's game, the Royals manager, Ned Yost, praised his starting pitcher, rookie Yordano Ventura, for seven strong innings.
He did his job. You know, for me, in this type of series, you know, if you can get us into the sixth inning tied or with the lead, you've done your job.
In the other dugout, you have the San Francisco manager, Bruce Bochy, not smiling, but saying he was glad to be going home with at least one win in Kansas City.
Just got away from us there in the sixth. I mean, we couldn't get some outs, but, you know, you go home, I think you take a split.
Well, and the Royals scored five runs in a sixth inning to break that game, split it wide open. So, Mike, thoughts after two games?
Sure. I think it's interesting that both managers, the Bochy in game one, praised his pitcher, Baumgartner, who's great. And then we heard Ned Yost praising his pitcher. The pitchers were good. But whenever a team scores seven runs, which happened in both games for the winning team, you got to expect they're going to win. And even though Bruce Bochy, I think, is one of the best managers in baseball, he made a mistake. He left his starting pitcher in too long. And the statistics show that Jake Peavy really does terrible the third time around the order. So when guys get to see him the third time, they light him up. That's what happened. Going to San Francisco, you know, the Royal starter, Jeremy Guthrie, is not that good. That doesn't seem to have fazed the Royals thus far. I don't know. I have no idea what to think, except the Royals are this magical team that will continue to surprise us, I believe.
Well, that's what makes it fun. Mike Pesca, the Daily Podcast, the Gist at Slate.com. Mike, thanks as always.
You're welcome.